Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello everybody and welcome to the Super J Cast. Yes, we are continuing to record despite what we promised last week. I'm Joel, joined by David McDonald. It is Wednesday the 13th of March 2024. This is episode 301. I want to start just by giving a shout out to my good friend Sipsy, who people may know from the Smartcast wrestling podcast, which we started. Yeah. We've not done for years and years and years, but it was my first venture into wrestling podcasting, and it's a good friend of mine. You know, we've been going to Arsenal games since like 2006, I want to say, is the first time. Wow. So I've known him a long time, and he's just become a dad. So I just wanted to say congratulations to him and his lovely wife Sanya and little baby Casey. So
beautiful.
Well done for joining the dad club. You're going to be great.
Yep, congratulations. That is fantastic news. Yeah, the dad club, it's growing by leaps and bounds. We know a lot of people with newborns and sleep deprivation and all of that. So, yeah, good on you. All right, Sips, good job. The seed works.
The seed is strong. Let's talk about sandwiches for a bit. Ben says, what are you putting on a sandwich? And Ichiban Sweetcar says, I would say a better question is, what kind of potato chips slash crisps go best on a sandwich? It reminds me of when I had a part-time job when I was at university working at the aquarium, the Sea Life Centre in Brighton. And I deliberately let a big crate of McCoy's cheese and onion crisps go out of date by failing to rotate the stock. So they all went out of date, and then the manager was like, oh, all these crisps have gone out of date. Joel, do you want to take these home? And I was like, yes, I do. And ended up eating cheese and onion McCoy's crisp sandwiches for a long time, which kind of ruined it for me because I had too many of them and I don't like them anymore. But in terms of stuff to put on a sandwich, you want to know secret ingredient to go on a sandwich?
I would love vinegar. It. Please.
Bit of vinegar, please. Yeah.
Yeah? Is it? Yeah. Well, I mean, we have – I mean, I feel like we're in a – we're – you by proxy, mind you. I'm in a just a wonderful haven with great sandwich options. We have our Italian hoagie for our Philly suburb pronunciation.
Is it Wawa's where you get the good hoagies?
Gotta get a Wawa, get a hoagie. We do have the Wawa's, yes. Now I will say this. I'm gonna say something very. Wawa's are convenient, right? But to say that they are great by any stretch of the imagination is pretty preposterous, right? You have plenty of options. The thing is that it's good at 2 a.m. when you're fucking half loaded, you know. That's perfect, right? But no, we have better options than that around here in this area. But yeah, Wawa is our thing. Our John, if you will. But yes, we have the delicious with the oil and vinegar. Absolutely, it's a requirement. Are you a mayonnaise kind of guy?
Yep. I've been watching a lot of sandwich construction videos, actually. This guy I follow on YouTube, I think his name is Ethan Chlebowski, and he just does some very good content on constructing and layering the perfect sandwich. Yeah, mayo was a part of that. Smoked sea salt, I'm sort of dabbling in that at the moment. Just all these little accoutrements that lifts the regular sandwich to being an excellent sandwich. But yeah, the vinegar, my pickled chili vinegar, I like to have that in the fridge with chili pickled gherkins and pickled onions and stuff. It's a really versatile condiment.
Yes. I'm with you. I am a big fan of your lettuce, tomato, onion combo on the sandwich. My favorite sandwich of all time. I have two. So we have, I don't know if you're familiar with the chicken cutlet sandwich. Fantastic. So a thin chicken cutlet, breaded, fried, delicious. Then usually there's a very thick and chunky mozzarella cheese and maybe some prosciutto and balsamic vinegar. Awesome.
Fucking awesome. That sounds brilliant. This reminded me of some of the best sandwiches. I think the two sandwiches, the best sandwiches I've had that stick in my mind. One was, you know, like those Vietnamese banh mi.
Yes. Oh, delicious. Yes.
Some random old lady on the streets of Ho Chi Minh City outside the museum. Fucking incredible. Mm. And in Florence, Firenze. It's a famous sandwich place there. I can't even remember what was in it, but it was just so fucking good.
Was it like focaccia bread? Was it focaccia? Yeah,
you know, all that good stuff.
Oh, so good. Yeah,
it's just real art, a good sandwich, isn't there? Sandwiches don't get enough love, I feel.
I mean, listen, look at me. I'm fucking sandwich mania. I'm the king of the sandwich. I look like a fucking sandwich. Also my favorites was that cheese toasty at Covent, was it Covent Garden? Or no, it was Borough Market. Borough Market. Fucking, to this day, I just crave that sandwich. So good. And then I'm a big fan. I've said it probably before on the show, but the muffaletta, it's a New Orleans kind of thing, and it has your general Italian cold cuts on it, deli meats, and then it has this olive spread. Oh, it's fucking great. It's a little spicy, it's vinegary, olivey. So good. Those are my two. Chicken cutlet, great. And again, we have cheesesteaks and we have variations of the cheesesteak. The pizza steak, fantastic. I live in a fucking area where the sandwiches are to die for. So I feel very fortunate. Between New York and Philly, I think we got it made in the shade when it comes to the fucking sandwiches, man.
Let's check in with sports reporter Damon. So Boo says, Damon, and I don't know how to pronounce this name, so I'm going to have a shot. Any Jason Kelce memories worth sharing? And Marky says, will the Leafs ever beat the Bruins again? So over to you, Sports Damon.
Well, they played twice in the past, I think, week or two, the Leafs and Boston. Boston are bitter rivals, and we lost both times. And one of the games wasn't even really that close. So, I don't want to see – I mean, you would think – I just don't want to see him in the playoffs. I think we see Tampa Bay, and I'll take that at this point, even though they improved. Leafs are in town tomorrow. Leafs are in town in Philly tomorrow. I'm excited to see my boys rub shoulders with the great Austin Matthews. Will Leafs, I don't know. I can't answer that, and it doesn't look good for me. Also, Jason Kelce. Jason Kelce he does a podcast with his brother Travis. Travis is plays for the Kansas City Chiefs, and is currently dating that Taylor Swift, right? So, but he played for the Eagles. The brother played for the Eagles, and he's like just this big, like think of it like the big construction guy, right, with the beard and the guy who probably has a two Miller Lights in his fucking lunch pail, big as a fucking semi truck. But I mean, he was always really nice. Like anytime I had to deal with him, after a game, they open up the fucking locker room, right? And they bring a lot of the star players and the people who performed well in the game. They bring them up to a podium in another room just because it's easier for everybody. But rarely was Kelce involved in that. Like rarely would he go to the podium, so it was always a scrum, but he was always accommodating and always gave good quotes and always gave good answers to questions, and was never like, he never was a problem, like he never was a fucking issue. never thought like he had like a big head, like the fame that he's gotten recently has gotten to his head. I don't think in any case he, I mean, he's pretty infamous too. So when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, they have a parade in Broad Street. It's the big street in the city in Philly. And he's, you know, he's in a, if I say the Mummers, do you know what the Mummers are?
No.
Okay. So New Year's Eve, traditionally in Philadelphia, they have a parade, or New Year's Day, and it goes all fucking day. And it is kind of an excuse for people to just get rip-roaring drunk. But there's these things called string bands, right? So it's a lot of banjos and brass and, you know, and they march down. And everybody's got these little clubs that they do. The Mummers, right? You know, at times you could probably say, a little racist. you could probably say, a little misogynist. But okay, whatever. For like years until rather recently, like women weren't allowed to participate in this parade. But basically it was just a fucking excuse for people to get rip roaring drunk and do dumb shit. But he got dressed up as a mummer. So it's like these big fancy costumes with all kinds of fucking glitter and these hats, and they look like a gigantic wizard, you know, they look like a fucking gigantic magician. And he got dressed up as that when he was going down the parade. So that was a little thing. And his speech in the at the parade is pretty infamous as well, because he got every other word was fuck, and he got beeped just live, being live broadcast. So anywho, he was a good dude. So that there's my Jason Kelce. I don't really have any specific one story, but always cordial when I had to deal with.
Well, we've got some correspondence from our best friend Antonio. He says, congrats on the Arsenal win. So you may not be aware, Damon, we won our Champions League second round match against Porto over two legs. So we've now reached the Champions League quarterfinals for the first time in 14 years.
Wow.
It's a big day. Big day for Arsenal. And we are doing really well at the moment. I think we're top of the league, actually. And
so what was the Liverpool City game? Like, what was on the line there? Because I watched, I popped in and out of it. I couldn't watch the whole thing. But
so basically, Arsenal, City, and Liverpool are sort of neck and neck in the chase for the Premier League title. There's like 1 or 2 points separating the three of them. So it's very, very exciting. And so, yeah, that was a Premier League game. And the fact that they drew meant Arsenal remained top of the league. So our next Premier League game is against away to Man City. So it's just a really exciting time to be an Arsenal fan. And I don't necessarily think we'll win the Premier League or the Champions League, but it's just nice to be in the middle of March and still have, you know, exciting big games to look forward to. And yeah, it's just such a change from what we've been used to in recent years. Like, basically, we turn into a bunch of bastards. We're a team of bastards now. And I think that doesn't really get talked about enough, how you have to be a bit of a bunch of bastards to be a successful sporting team. So I always feel like historically we've been a bit too nice, a bit too soft. We played Porto in this Champions League knockout game, and like the away leg, it was just like watching a different sport. I've forgotten how annoying it is watching these European games, because like literally you brush against one of their players and they hit the floor, they're rolling around screaming, the referee's giving yellow cards to our players. They just do Porto everything they could to just stop football from happening. And that's not what we're used to in the Premier League. In the Premier League, you can just basically kick seven shades of shit out of each other, and you're lucky if the referee blows for a foul. But it's like totally different game when it comes to these European fixtures. So it was probably the most unpleasant 210 minutes of football I've watched in my life. And we ended up winning on penalties, but it was really exciting in the end. And yeah, very, very happy Arsenal fan, even though we may end up trophyless, but it's just nice to be in the mix.
It is. Will it break your heart though? Again?
Yeah, but that's part of the fun, isn't it?
Is it?
I would rather have my heart broken in a big match than, you know, we get to this point of the season and, you know, we're in sixth place or whatever, and City are running away with it, like 30 points clear of us. There's no joy in that. I'd rather, you know, have things to look forward to. And you never know, luck of the draw. There's just, you know, all the heavyweights left in the Champions League. There's Barcelona, Real Madrid. Who else is in it? Man City, Bayern Munich. So yeah, I'm just very excited to see who we're going to get in the next round. And it's nice to have these big European occasions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yes, you want to be in the mix because anything can happen. Absolutely. As we can see with the New Japan Cup, you know, if you get to this
Great segue. Don't force me to talk about New Japan, Damon. I'm not ready to do it yet.
All right.
Do it when I need to get myself in that emotional space first.
I'm with you. But yeah, it's good to be playing meaningful games late in the season. No doubt. How have you guys done at City historically?
Terrible. Okay. We get destroyed there. But I don't know. I fancy our chances this time. We've got a squad that's almost fully fit. We're just full of confidence. We've beaten them once already at our place this season. And I think they might be a bit scared.
Ooh.
I think this is the best chance we've ever got of going there in good form, relatively healthy, and taking a game to them.
So you got a little, little strut in your step, and the team does too. I like that. Okay. Look, I don't want to jinx it, but you know, I'll be rooting for you. Want a big win for you. And I like to see City lose because Mackie's a fraud City fan. And I just want to rub it in his face a little bit. A lot of fraud fans around. Boy, oh boy. A lot of fucking frauds. Everywhere I turn. Frauds. But yeah. I hope when does the season end for you guys? Like May?
May, that's right. There's 10 games left, I think.
Okay. How's the schedule look overall?
Tricky. We got tricky fixtures left. So that's why I'm saying, again, I don't think that we will win the Premier League, but we got a chance.
But it's between you three, right? Is there anybody else that's in the mix?
No.
Okay. I tell you what, the one thing I do love about Premier League is the idea of relegation. I think relegation is maybe more interesting to me than the people who win the championship. Like I just find how and at every level, it's, you know, it just changes a whole, you know, complexion. Is that the word I'm looking for? It changes everything for a team. And these little fucking small, you know, clubs that now, you know, graduate to you know, an upper level, wherever they are, wherever they might be, it's pretty amazing. Like, I love that. Like, I can't imagine, like, I don't know, I'm gonna give you for the hockey guys, you know, the Hershey Bears are now in the NHL, you know, like, you know, the Wheeling Nailers have made it, and you know, the San Jose Sharks have been demoted to the AHL. That would be great, because I think in American sports, there is an emphasis of tanking. Like, if you're bad, you might as well just be awful bad, because you have a better chance of getting a higher draft pick, right? So every year they have it.
There's not that sense of jeopardy, whereas like in the Premier League, if you get relegated, you could
the be money.
Seriously in the shit financially. Yeah. Well, actually, not so these days, because they've got these parachute payments where you just seem to get showered with money even after you get relegated. But point still stands.
Yeah. I mean, we reward teams for tanking, like not losing, tanking. Like, there are entire teams and organizations that their game plan for the year is, let's lose as much as we fucking can. I have the basketball team here, 76ers. They did that for 2 years. Intentionally put out the worst fucking basketball team they could find just so they could tank and rebuild. And teams kind of are incentivized to do that. So, yeah, it's the worst thing about American sports, to be honest with you. Now, I will say the worst thing about Premier League is, like, wouldn't it be more exciting if you guys did have a playoffs? Like, I understand that your season is your season, right? But you can kind of have a season where, you know, five games left in the season and a team just has run away with it and they're already the champions. And so it's like, okay, what the fuck are we playing these games for now? And again, relegation is probably more important and making it in Champions League top four, right? Top four in Premier League?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. So, I mean, there is things to be played for, don't get me wrong, but Like playoff, any sport in the playoffs, I think you up the level of competition, and the games mean that much more. And you're hanging on by every swing of the bat, every fucking shift, every fucking pass. Everything is uber important. And I think it's missing. Like I miss that in Premier League and football, European football in general. I wish you guys incorporated something like that. But everything else, it feels like I love the idea of relegation. Fucking love it.
Yeah, well, if Man City continue to monopolize the league, then I would welcome it as well. If it's a way to try and put some equity back into the game. I mean, I think
the Great O'Conn
out of the last six. It's not very competitive.
Right, right. I was going to say, I think the Great O'Conn should be relegated. Relegated to Noah.
Well, how long have we been saying this? How great would it be if the G1 had qualifiers? Like the Kizuna Road Tour should be said qualifying matches where the guys who performed, bottom of their group or below a certain points threshold have to enter these qualifying matches against up-and-comers who are gunning for a spot.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't that be so much more interesting than instead of, just an announcement? Like, make people earn the spot?
If it was just fucking, like, Tangaloa against Honma. Just something. Just put some kind of sports drama into it. Put some stakes in there.
Yeah. I'm with you. Like, that's I think that's actually a really great idea. And they have plenty of time between like New Japan Cup and G1 to make that happen. I agree that should be something that they should incorporate. Making those qualifying matches mean something. Have it tell that people talk about stories. Well, okay. I mean, to me, that's the story. Is this fucking guy shit the bed and he didn't get in. And he's got to work harder next year to get in.
Predictable. Like, even if it's like a young lion against a more established name, the young lion's not going to win, but it, would, I think, lend itself to good drama and exciting near falls and something memorable.
Yep. I'm with you. I would buy into that tomorrow. Like, listen, we can't come up with any worse ideas than what they're doing now. But, yeah, I would. I think that would be. That would at least add an element of intrigue, as opposed to we're just waiting for that fucking video package to be put together, and the guys don't even know that they're in until they see the fucking video. That's the funniest part to me.
Sometimes even then they don't check like 2 days before the tournament. I'm in what now?
Right. Where am I going to be? That is. To me, one of the most hilarious things about New Japan and the idea that I do kind of like the idea of they don't know a lot of times, who's going over until they get to the building. I kind of like that idea. But yeah, I mean, Jesus Christ. All right. Drive the boat because I know.
Let's move on. Right, we'll go back to Antonio. So he says, "I've got a question, a personal. Since you guys are close with this person, I mean, he does shows with you guys every December. Which now that this person I'm talking about, Kevin Kelly, since he was fired from AEW, is door to return to NJPW open or is the door closed? Since he talked a lot of dirty laundry about the company to Dave Meltzer on his YouTube channel, so is the open or closed again? I'm asking that you guys, since you're personal friends of him. So that's my question. And congrats to Arsenal on going to next round." Daryl also says, "As an outside observer and a Voices of Wrestling, what's your take on the Kevin Kelly situation? I'm personally thinking Kevin's use in AEW has more to do with the shitty state of US television wrestling than anything to do with Ian." You want my take, Damon? Log off. Everyone should just log off and never tweet. Yeah. Unless you're me, because I'm the only person that's good at Twitter. Everyone else should just stop. Never ends well.
1,000%. 1,000%. And I texted you. We had this conversation of... The fucking app does nothing but hurt. I'm sorry, it just does. But I'm talking about from a pro wrestling perspective. Like, I just don't see the benefit of it. And there's nothing. And here's the thing. He's I think if he were to take. And I also want to be very clear. I have not reached out to him. I just didn't feel like it was a thing where, you know, I feel like the last thing that dude needs is me texting him and saying, "Hey, what's the story?" And leave him alone, right? He didn't work out. I mean, from everything that, look, if he was, how many times has JR, like, just like, you just shake your head and you're like, how is this guy in front of a fucking live microphone? But yet continuously second chances, third chances. I'm sure contracts have something to do with it, whatever. It's a different ballgame. And I kind of liken it to what we do here, where, okay, let's turn on the mics, let's hit record, and let's fucking bullshit like we're at the fucking pub, right? And talk about, New Japan Pro Wrestling somewhat. Like that, and that's kind of what I felt to a certain degree was the broadcasts, the English commentating broadcasts. There wasn't the, okay, you got to hit this mark. Okay, now here's your out cue. Okay, now there's a picture in picture that you got to do a voiceover over. Then there's this and that. And there was none of that in New Japan. It was just turn on the mics, call the matches, right? So there was a huge difference from what he was doing and that he was really good at, I thought, to moving to AEW, where I think everyone would agree that it was just not working. The tweets, we know Kevin as a person that is not afraid to speak his mind about topics. If you ask him a question, he's going to answer it to the best of his ability, at least in my opinion, right? At least in my dealings with him, he's always been that way. Look, anytime that you take fucking shots at the company that you work for, there's going to be backlash, and maybe, and I don't know this. I am speculating, absolutely am, but maybe he was unhappy with how he was being used, and unhappy with the situation, and kind of feeling like this might not be for me, right? This whole thing might not be for me, and he fired out the tweet so that he could get fired, right? Because guess what? If he gets fired, he can collect unemployment, right? If he quits, he can't. So maybe that was the case. I don't know. I just know that his temperature went from doing our show and talking about how happy he was to, I don't know what I'm doing here. And that needle moved very quickly, didn't it? Look, if you're a pro wrestler or involved in New Japan in any way, don't be on our Discord. don't. That's not the place, right? That's another place. Like, and I'm not saying that because I'm saying that because the people on our Discord are fucking maniacs, right? But I mean that in the most endearing way. But it's not a place for you to make friends. It's not a place for you to hear what the scuttlebutt is about. Like, just fucking log off, delete it, and
just send it straight to my DMs.
Yeah,
don't put it on the public Discord.
Yeah,
DMs.
Yeah, at least you'll have some fucking privacy.
Then I can monetize it. Yeah,
yeah, that's true too. That's what you should do. If you want to get a temperature, if you want to do that, that's what you do. You don't fucking join our Discord. So. Yeah. Is he going back to New Japan? I can't see it. I mean, let's put it this way. One, I think he left amicably, and the people there, I don't think there was any hard feelings, to be quite honest with you, that I'm aware of. But I just think that ship has sailed. Like, I think Walker's in that spot, and that's Walker's gig now. And I literally just got an Amazon. I have 5 boxes and a bag. What the fuck is my wife ordering? Because I didn't order anything. It's to the top of the fucking door. I can look out the front right from my office. And there's one.
Open
two.
It. Open it.
Oh, I will. You know what it is? It might be stuff for work, though, because she that does a lot of like work engagement project things. So it might be a lot of that. But Jesus Christ, it's to the top of the door. Okay, Kevin Kelly. Yeah, it didn't work out, did it? It didn't, and I can't see him going back to New Japan. Because
I don't think he's enjoying it.
No, not at the end. It didn't feel like it. It didn't feel like it. And I don't know. Maybe he saw some handwriting on the wall. Maybe he, whatever, travel.
He wants to be close to his family. The travel. I mean, that whatever happens at New Japan or AEW doesn't change the fact that you get to be closer to your family, and that counts for a lot,
right? And then I mean, listen, we got to address the elephant in the room. You know, some of the views that. You know, and I don't know the whole story because I don't know the. I know he liked something that was a movie that dealt with a rather sensitive subject, and that the producers of that movie were involved in all, dumb shit. Like, I don't.
Yeah, like, I'll say this, Dave, right? Unless someone is like actively advocating something hateful, then I'm past the point in my life where I try to purity test my media, because that's a loser's game. If you purity test all your media, then you're going to end up with a lot of free time on your hands, because there is no ethical consumption under capitalism, as the kids say. So, wrestling is a nutty business full of nutty people who believe nutty things. So, the quicker I came to terms with that, the better.
And here's the thing: I know he liked, from what I understand, he liked the thing because it was about, you know, people busting these pedophile rings, if I'm not mistaken, the movie was about. I feel like I'm on slippery slope.
It was about Brit Rest.
It was about, okay. Oh, that's, it could be. I don't think he's that smart to fucking, or he cares. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's that, but I would say the same thing about me. To know the backstory of the producers that did some nefarious things. I don't know.
It takes like a high level of onlineness to know about that.
That's not him.
I don't know. Maybe I'm being too, that's too generous of a read, but.
I mean, in my dealings with him, I don't think he honestly had a fucking clue of like what that little like or thumbs up or heart or whatever the fuck he did meant, right? I call me naive, call me whatever. I just don't think he's that fucking in tune. I really don't, and he would be the first person to fucking say that. So, anywho, I just feel like the guy was never a good fit there. And, like, now what? Like, what are his options now? You know what I mean? Like, I think he drives a fucking truck at this point. I hate to say it, but. And he'll do, like, his.
Go to the gas station that Manabu Nakanishi's working at.
right. I guess. I mean, what do you do? I mean, like, WWE's not picking him up. Right? I mean, he doesn't seem like he's. I feel like he's.
DNA, are they? Is that. Would they take.
No. I mean, they want a younger, fresher, smiley guy, and I ain't him. Right? And again, I think he's well past. Wouldn't it be great if he showed up at fucking Noah? He just showed up and started doing commentary. It'd be great. That'd be something. Have a little feud. It'd be pretty fucking interesting. All right. So, that's that. That's the best I can do for you on that one.
All right. So how long was it? 43 minutes before we... Forsmith has taught New Japan, so that's a good record. News a little bit here. The 27th Never Openweight Six-Man Tag Team Champions will be crowned April 14th in Taipei. Wrestling World 2024. A one-night tournament will take place at ZEP New Taipei. So, yeah, I look forward to that. Always like a one-night tournament. And Andrew on our Discord was postulate what the teams might be, because he says LIJ, House of Torture, United Empire, and Just Five Guys are sending three guys each. So it could be Shingo, Tsuji, Bushi, Evil Show, Kanemaru, Great Okan, Akira, Callum, Sanada, Yuya, Doki. Chaos are sending four guys, Yano, Goto, Yoshihashi, and Yo. So that could be a team form there. Hontai are sending Tanahashi, Despi, Kojima, Tiger Mask, Bolton, so they could put a team in. So I like tournaments. One night tournament, I'm all for in favor of that.
Let's me too.
Make the never six man titles. Let's just get them off the. Well, it was a pretty fucking great reign, wasn't it? With Okada, Tanahashi, and Ishii. So I feel, you know, in spite of them vacating it, there's a certain level of prestige associated with these titles now, and hopefully they can keep that going.
Yeah, I like the fact that at least they're sending over people that, you know, have some name value, right? They're not just sending over, you know, just schlubs and like two factions. No,
all the schlubs are going over for Windy City Riot.
That's right around the corner, isn't it? When is that? That's when is that? Right after the cup, right? April?
Yeah, hold on, let me check. So this Taiwan show is April 14th.
Okay.
And Windy City Riot is April 12th. So it's like they've kind of split the roster. So I'm assuming that there's not going to be any crossover there. If you're at Windy City Riot, you're not going to be at Taiwan and vice versa.
Right. Right. That would be a hell of a flight. That's for sure. But I like it. I mean, I like the fact that they're at least treating it with some, you know, seriousness. That's for sure. Setting over the teams that they are. And I'm assuming these shows will be televised live. Like, it's not going to be like a pay-per-view kind of thing. So, yeah. I mean, that look, anytime that you have some type of stakes involved, and we just got done talking about it, but those stakes are important. They just help you get, you know, get into a match a little bit, as opposed to just watching a match. Like, there's value there. So good job by them on that. You got to tip the cap to them on that. So at least it looks interesting on paper.
Okay, let's get into some New Japan Cup then. So let's work in a reverse chronological order. Mm-hmm. So this was today's show in Okayama. Main event was Shingo Takagi defeating Gabe Kidd in 80 minutes and 20 seconds with Last of the Dragons. So Takagi is going through to the quarterfinals. This was, as expected, a very, very good match. And look, let's be honest, this roster and the product just feels down bad right now. Looking at who's champion and looking at some of the brackets for this, you're like, holy shit, what happened to this roster? And I feel Shingo is so important for this company right now. And a multitude of roles, like not only being able to put on the work rate-y stars match that people enjoy, myself included, but also help make that next generation look good. Because we, you know, there's sort of a missing generation there, and we acknowledge that, but making the next generation look good, even in defeat. And also like, just to be a role model, be a mentor to these guys. As, you know, we see the likes of Okada and Ospreay leaving, I think New Japan can't afford to just let a guy like Shingo be twiddling his thumbs. I think we really need to be using guys like him and guys like Zach. And so there was a good mission statement for that in this match. And, you know, hopefully Shingo's going to get a nice run in this cup. Gabe Kidd, looking good. I did kind of feel that he's working a fair bit lighter than he had done, you know, looking at comparing it to the Osaka Cage match or the Henare match. And obviously, like, there's a multitude of reasons why he might have toned down that reckless streak. But there's a question in my mind, does that compromise Gabe's ability to get over if he's not fully leaning into the fucking madman? He's got to find that balance where he can be aggressive and entertaining, but also, you know, not injure or upset his colleagues. You know, it's got to be sustainable long term. I just feel like Gabe Kidd's biggest areas for growth are emotional rather than technical. Like, the technical, I think it's all there. I love his work. So I thought this was a really great main event, exactly the sort of thing that New Japan should be in 2024, where, you know, let's have more intense matches between that hungry next generation and the old guards. Let's do more of this, please.
Yeah. It's to get back to your point of leaning on guys with tons of experience. Again, you're also leaning on a former IWGP world champion. So, yeah, I mean, I think people tend to forget that. And how important he is, not only during some of the darkest times, but also now, where, you know, the talent that has left, both of them former world champions, and even a guy like, you know, Tama Tonga to a certain degree, just having the experience and being a locker room presence and being front facing for New Japan for so many years. Like, there's value there. It might not always translate into the what you see in the ring with his matches, but I think backstage, locker room, absolutely, without question, I think. And they seem, and in every indicator that I've had would be that these guys are willing to share that knowledge as well, which I think is equally as important. So yeah, I mean, there is a comfort in Shingo having a prominent role in New Japan Cup. And I think, you know, even though I had him losing in the first round, in my pick'ems, I had other people that would have played that role, but Shingo can certainly play that role. And perform in that role excellently. Gabe, I think the biggest knock is exactly what you said, in that he's either got to be at 11 or it doesn't feel like it's a true-to-life, big-time performance from Gabe. And that's not sustainable. Like, that Gabe at 11, it just, he's got to figure out a way to still have that air about him and still have that presence about him, but be, you know, to have some longevity, right? Because A, it's either going to be him getting hurt or him hurting someone else, right? And then there's trust issues, and then away we go. To me, this was the best match of the tournament so far. And I think it's between this and, what was it, the Yoda-Suji, Jeff Cobb. Yeah. That was also very good too. But again, these are good matches. Nothing where I would be like, okay, you know, you got to carve out time in your day to watch. We haven't gotten there yet. Yes, it was nice to see today, because it did give me hope that as we move on in the tourney, that it's, you know, going to pick up, business will pick up, as JR would say. And you would think it would, given the talent, but then, boy, how we got to at least this spot, which is still not great. Let's be very clear. Still not great. But, boy, there was just some head scratchers and performances that were just, I don't know what we're doing. So, okay. That was good. Also on the show, what else we had? I forget.
We had, Evil defeating Hikuleo, 50 minutes, 23 seconds with the Evil move. I thought Hikuleo's selling is pretty good, but I don't think he's charismatic or dynamic enough to make a Hikuleo leg selling match compelling. I just didn't find it.
Until you get your leg.
I think he's at his best when he's got a quicker opponent who can, you know, bounce around and bump for him. And really, I just feel it's like the insipid booking of the tag division that's completely killed off any interest in Hikuleo and ELP. Like, they just both feel absolutely stone cold right now. Just the whole GOD-verse, as we saw on the Discord, that's like one of the least interesting parts of New Japan for me right now. And it was very funny to see like the other five members of House of Torture running in and attacking Hikuleo for about 10 minutes before anyone else from GOD decided to come and help him. And then was it ELP Irish whipped Jack Perry to the back? Like, you know, those old SmackDown versus Raw games where you could like Irish whip people into cars and things like that. And look, Evil wins relatively clean. I initially had this penciled in as a possible upset where, you know, Hikaleo might get a never title shot. But I'm now wondering, with the change of direction, looking if Hikaleo will even be around past the summer, if rumours are to be believed, that and we know how aggressively WWE are looking to recruit Polynesian wrestlers, that maybe we might not be seeing Hikaleo for too much longer. I don't know. How are you feeling about this match and Hikaleo in general?
I thought the match was awful, to be quite honest. I didn't think it was like the worst thing I've ever seen, but it was. I had to watch it at double speed. I think from day one, right? From day one, when we talked about Hikaleo and his progression, I think one of the key phrases that would come out of our mouths a lot was, this guy's tailor-made WWE. Like, this guy would be we would usually say Vince would get a fucking boner, you know, over this guy, and Vince is not.
No,
there,
don't obviously. Say that anymore. That's
yeah, I know. I know. We're treading on very thin ice with that comment. I would not have a problem with that. Like, because I guess my question is this: I know people had him penciled in as playing the role of Bad Luck Fale will be Hikaleo. What value is that? Like, especially in New Japan, like they're not this promotion where, you know, it was Vader and Bigelow and you know, I don't know, name other Scott Norton, you know, even, you know, to a certain degree, the Steiners, like big fucking, you know, power warrior, you know, just like those days are long gone. And those big monster type guys, like, okay. I don't know. I just don't. I like it. Like, if you're going to do that, you're tailor made for WWE. You're tailor made. Like, it's kind of a no brainer to me. And like, your value in New Japan is like, you're not strapping them up. You're not giving them a title, a singles title, right? Like, you're not going to do that, are you? No. So, yeah. If from what we are told is accurate information, I can't see him like I can't see him in G1. Like, I think he'll be gone before then.
Yeah, and probably for the best, to be honest. I think I'd embrace the turnover at this point. And let's see who's next. So then let's go to the preview show after that. So that was Tuesday in Ehime, where our main event was Hiroki Goto defeating Chase Owens in 21 minutes, 36 seconds via GTR. Michael writes in just with a statement, Chase in main event, yikes. I mean, David, God bless the fans that bought a ticket for this show to watch this as the main event of the show that they exchanged their hard-earned cash for. And I mean, actually, I thought it was a pretty good match. As much as I'd like to bury it, there was nothing particularly wrong with it. I thought Chase worked very hard and, you know, at least isn't botching his signature moves, as another person will come on to soon. It's just, he looks like absolute dog shit. He physically disgusts me. And I don't want to turn on New Japan Pro Wrestling and see wrestlers who have the same physique as me. That doesn't feel good. I don't want that. I want to look, I want to see muscles there and trim abs. I want to see six packs. Listener, The Great Starts writes in and says, my five-year-old woke up and came downstairs during Goto versus Chase. After sitting with me for a few minutes, he said, wow, these guys need to train more. Do you agree with the child's assessment? And yes. B. Frank says, is Chase Owens the smelliest looking dude in the world? Also, what do you think Chase Owens smells like?
He probably smells like unwashed
tobacco.
Tobacco? Unwashed tobacco? Probably. I would say just like, he seems like a guy that doesn't necessarily take care of his gear. When it comes to like, you lock up with him and you're getting fucking, you know, last tour stank on him.
I get very upset when the bandana comes off. It fell off, and I was very upset with Goto for making it fall off. I wanted Chase to put it back on.
Yeah.
Because the Chase Owens hairline is deeply upsetting to me.
He's got that Shawn Michaels in him, right? Those Texas boys. When the hair starts receding, we grow it out, we pull it back. Just join the club. Just join the club. We all embrace you, Chase. Can I say this, though? Our Discord loves, I think their favorite pastime is shitting on Chase. I don't think Chase is that bad. I think Chase is actually, I'm not going to say great, but he's serviceable, and he isn't as bad as people want to believe he is. You may not like his aesthetic. You might not like his look. You might think, you know, I agree with all the points that were made. But as a pro wrestler, like, he's not bad. I look, he might be the guy that you know, makes everyone laugh in the locker room, right? He might be the guy that brings delicious pastries with him from Texas. Or, you know, other gifts, right, in a locker room that might be equally as delicious, right? So he make friends, and he's a good guy, and people like him, and away we go.
That's not what I've heard.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, it's just a theory. That being said, I don't think he's awful. I don't. I just don't, like, want to see him anywhere sniffing a, pardon the pun, the stank of a quarter final, right? So I'm kind of glad we've crossed that bridge. I will also say that Hirooki Goto is a tag team wrestler at this point. I feel like he's a guy that thrives in a tag environment right now. And to see him in a singles match, I'm not saying it's a massive downgrade, like we're looking at, you know, Tenzan or something. But like we're at the point of Hirooki Goto's run where tags is a solid spot for him. And I understand what they were trying to do with giving people buys, previous winners, et cetera. He's kind of sticking out like a sore thumb.
And the semi-main event for this show, I'm laughing already, David Finlay defeating Tangaloa in 10 minutes, 42 seconds via overkill. I've got to say this, Tangaloa is, for me, way more interesting than he's ever been in this new, like, incredibly self-aware role. Very calculated attempts to farm engagement on social media by performing increasingly elaborate moves very, very badly. Like, the 619 he did in this match was quite special. Like, he managed to outdo himself with the Kamigoye attempts in a few days ago. Like, he's, I don't know, he's given off the vibe of a man who is, like, he's wrestling these matches against his will. I mean, my dude, are you okay? Like, blink twice if Gedo is threatening you and forcing you to win matches. Because I don't know, like, is he trying to get fired or something? What is this guy's deal? It's very entertaining to watch. And look, in all seriousness, like, if you put aside the hilarious move botches, he's not actually that bad. Like, this match was okay, apart from the 619. He's a just about passable, very occasional singles wrestler. I think a lot of people have forgotten that. At his best, I thought he was a really good hot tag in the period when the OG Gorillas of Destiny were actually trying. But he's got absolutely no business being in singles tournaments unless it's first round cannon fodder. But he's going to be in the G1, so fuck all of us, I guess. David says, what other moves would you like to see Tangaloa try and fail to use in his next few matches? Multiverse Aces, I'm glad to see the podcast continue after Tangaloa's win over Great Okan. What was more indicative of the current state of New Japan right now, the Kamigoye or the 619 attempt? I hope Loa is okay because those moments were truly sad. I mean, he's on Twitter commenting on GIFs of his own move, saying, what's his, like, fucking shit or something? And then New Japan deleting the original tweet with the GIF of the move. Like, what is going on?
Chaos. It's fucking anarchy in that promotion right now. Look, I mean, is he doing it on purpose? I don't know why, but like it's not like he was great before, right? So I don't think that his performances in the ring is indicative to how far he goes in a given tournament, right? So is he doing it on purpose? I just think he's doing shit that's like he has no right to do, in the sense of, I don't know if he's A, was even at his peak physically and health-wise, would he be able to pull off some of the shit that he's trying? Or B, he's still very hurt, and he's doing these things where, you know, we're looking at a fucking Kota Ibushi situation here, right? Like, he just has no right to fucking be trying this shit. But again, as a professional wrestler, you would think that, okay, you're getting in the ring and you kind of know what you can do and what you can't do, right? Like, you just, and then you work your match around those limitations, right? Like, why? Like, I guess it's not that the end result, because obviously that was garbage, and he even is tweeting out that it was shit. But like, what's the mindset of going into a match and saying, "Yeah, I'm gonna hit this"? like, no, you're not. You're not hitting anything. So that's why I kind of think like, okay, is he doing this on purpose? But then again, like, why would you do that on purpose? Like, what? Like, is he trying to do like a? Do you remember ECW's? Who was it? JT Smith, where he fucked up one move, right? And you know, the fans, of course, ECW Arena, they weren't the most forgiving fan base, that's for sure. You know, you fucked up chant, blah blah blah, and they turned that into a gimmick. You know, before he joined the FBI. I mean, is that what he's doing? Like, he's doing the guy that fucks up moves? Like, I don't, like, New Japan's okay with that? Like, I just don't see the end game of him. Like, what would be the end game of him intentionally doing it? But then on the other side of the bracket, I'm like, if you know that there's a question mark on you doing any of these fucking moves that you're trying, like, why are you doing them? Like, you don't have to do them. Like, you don't have a gun to your head. It's like, hit it six, you got to do a 619. Like, why? I don't know. No, it's just one of those things again that just boggles me. Like, it just boggles my mind. It boggles my mind that he is not one and done in the tournament. It boggles my mind that he's trying to do shit that he sure as hell can't fucking pull off. And like, what's the end game to that? Again, keep in mind, this is a guy that, what, 2 days before the fucking tournament, he didn't even know he was in it. So it wasn't like he was, you know, on the treadmill getting his cardio in. It's just, I don't know. It just seems like, you know what I compare this promotion to right now? Is one of those fireworks that they send up, they say, well, and then boom, and then it's, that's what it is. Like, it's just, like, there's this explosion that has happened, and then there's these fragments that are just dangling off into fucking outer space and burning out. That's where I feel like we are right now. Like, I just feel like we are out of fucking control. And this is, like, as you like to say, proof of concept of that feeling, this match in general. And again, David Finlay going on, great. I think everyone, well, at least I did. I mean, I figured he'd go deep. But, yeah. I don't even know why we're talking about Tangaloa here in 2024, to be honest, quite honest with you.
Yeah, this match was so bad that it's woken up Arthur. Aww. And upset him. I know, Arthur, it was terrible, wasn't it? He should not be in the tournament. I agree with you, mate.
Yep.
Right, so let's then go to the previous show, which was Monday, March the 11th in Ehime. A main event for that was Sanada defeating Yoshihashi in 23 minutes, 51 seconds.
Aww.
Yeah, that's my review of the match. It was quite boring for most of it, but then it had a really hot closing stretch and the crowd got into it. And by the end of it, I was like, hey, that was pretty good. And my takeaway was like, this is Sanada's lane. Like, he should be able to main event and win one time a year at this venue only against Yoshihashi or Yoshihashi tier wrestlers. No main event in big shows, no world titles, no single titles. Keep him well away from that. This is his level. Main event, nice little main event in a warehouse.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, I mean, this is another thing that I just don't understand. is, okay, if it were accurate that this is the same guy that wrestled with, you know, his pectoral muscle, as it was described, was ripped off the bone. Where's the healing process that goes on? They just keep sticking him in the ring and sticking him in the ring. Like, once again, this is pro wrestling, right? Where we can predetermine a lot of things to protect people, to get them in and get them out, maybe put over somebody, maybe, you know, change up the brackets, right? I just feel like that they have legitimately gone with the lethal lottery concept of, okay, we're going to pull out these ping pong balls and whatever it lands on, that's where we're going with. Like, and that's, to me, that's just either A, lazy, or B, just questionable of the decisions that they're making. I don't think anyone, and yes, great job in the sense of give them a win there, perfect, against that type of competition, sure. I got no problem with it. I just don't understand why him. Because if everything we're led to believe, the guy could probably use a break. And maybe he gets it coming up. But, yep, once again, so far we've got Sonata deep in the tournament. We've got David Finlay deep in the tournament. We've got, well, we'll find out tonight, or when is Zach wrestling Ren? Is that tonight or tomorrow or sometime?
That is, let me check. I think that's Friday.
Okay. So you would assume Zach's going on. I said evil. Did I say evil? Evil going on. I mean, aside from Zach, who are we excited about here?
Well, I'll come on to people that I'm excited about, but none of the above that you mentioned, basically. Right.
Okay. So, but that's, you know, half the fucking brackets. So here we are. Here we go, kids. Here we go.
Violent Skipping says, why is Sonata's boot so bloody filthy?
Ha!
Yeah, could have given them a little bit of a scrub. They were very, very grubby.
Well, they're white too, right?
Here was the... yes, Jack Perry defeating Toriano, 8 minutes, 28 seconds with a running knee strike. So far, I'm quite enjoying the Perry run, and I love him for coming out in his full evil goat mask in a venue that looks just like a massive, brightly lit warehouse. That was very, very good. This was sort of more straight-laced than the standard Yano match. Maybe a bit long, but I guess they're just trying to establish Jack Perry and his moveset and everything. This was all right, wasn't it? Was it okay? I don't even know anymore.
I mean, it was. Look, it was better than when it was better than I expected. But let's not get out of control here. Like, I was expecting absolute dog shit, and it wasn't dog shit. Like, it at least was edible, right? I don't know. Like, how are you? I like the ballsiness of them to say, okay, a guy like Jack Perry, you're going in House of Torture. Like, there is something that's like, okay, that's an unexpected thing. I know that you had talked about it with John Carroll previously, but I think that was a little bit of a different twist, right? Something that might be a little bit unexpected. Now, that being said, I don't think I'm like now running out and buying a fucking Jack Perry t-shirt, right? It's been there. And I think that comes with the territory of being in House of Torture. I think the bigger problem for me personally is, once again, you got Paul Jones's army that's in the main event, and two guys that are moving on, and will play a prominent role as we move into the summer months. So that's concerning, right? And he's leading that charge, a guy who they brought in, and they, again, we're not saying push to the moon, but, you know, he's had a prominent role, right? he's been had a prominent role, and I just don't know if, like, if you were going to give me a list of 10 guys, if Jack Perry would be in the top 10 of that list. Now, that being said, I think he's done a decent job making it work, right? He's done a decent job in the ring. I don't know if he's blown my socks off with anything. He's been adequate. He's been adequately there in a role that I didn't expect him to take on at all. So I guess I got to give him props, right? I have to give him props if I'm being honest. He's not terrible. He's in a role that's a little bit different than we thought, which is, you know, always a little bit more exciting. And in the ring, it hasn't been terrible, right? So again, is he the second coming of Hiroshi Tanahashi? No, but like, is he getting pushed to the value that I thought he would have? No. Truth be told, no. But I think he's making the most of the situation. And I didn't have high mark. Like, it wasn't like this fucking barometer that was, you know, earth-shatteringly going to change the fucking complexity of the pro wrestling landscape. But nobody thought that. But I think he's making the most of his situation.
We go back to Sunday, March 10th in Hyogo, where our main event was Yota Tsuji defeating Jeff Cobb in 21 minutes, 41 seconds with the Gene Blaster. This is my match of the tournament by far. Yeah. I really love this. I thought it was fantastic. And I don't think Jeff Cobb is getting enough praise for the work he put in to make Yota Tsuji look a million bucks. And yet another example of what I've been asking for a while, which is having the next generation working with the more experienced guys. This is what we should be having from guys like Jeff Cobb. And actually, you know, maybe even more than that. I think Jeff Cobb is probably underutilized by the company at this point. Yeah. But I thought he was tremendous. He was really dynamic here and flying around and bumping like a madman. There was a really tremendously creative spots, had an incredible closing stretch. And at the moment, you asked me, who am I excited for in this tournament? I'm hitching my wagon to Tsuji at this point, which of course means he's immediately going to lose to El Fantasmo. But yeah, I think that would be, if you're handing me the book, Yota Tsuji going all the way, going through LIJ teammates, taking out Shingo in the semi-final, beating
Finley,
David Finley in the final. Mm. That would be good. Yeah. Finley losing another final. And then he doesn't have to beat Naito for the title at Sakura Genesis, but you know, I think we've really got to get behind at least one of these guys, because Shota's already been eliminated. Let's get behind Tsuji, because he's very cool and good and we like him.
Yep. I'm in on that. And again, we were talking, whether it was last week or the week before, about how we just wanted some of these youngsters to break through outside of round two, get to round three, maybe even deeper. So yeah, I mean, this is the guy that they picked. And hopefully it continues, because yeah, I think that's great. And I'm going to agree with you too. I think right now the most underutilized guy that they have on that roster might be Jeff Cobb. Like, he has all the tools, and it's just one of those things where they've misused him for so long. It feels like he's always been a guy that's been on the verge of kind of crossing the threshold. And he just never has. So you do that, you go to that well too many times, and it's going to take a little bit more to make him a serious threat. But they have something there. Like, we talked about Hikuleo being a monster, and what's the value there? Like, okay, let's remember, we do have Jeff Cobb, right? And to me, like, him in a bigger, more prominent, more dangerous role, I could get behind that. I could absolutely get behind that. So again, if the young guy that they pick is Yota Tsuji, great, I'm all for it, because I think it's well deserved. If we want to give Jeff Cobb some flowers and let's get him heated up a bit. I'm all in for that as well. My fear is that I don't know this, but it doesn't feel like there are other companies that are breaking down his door to get him in, right? And I don't know what the story is there. I don't know why. So I don't know if that hurts his value or that helps his value. But he's just such a talented fucking guy that I just like. He's just one of those guys that's just a little bit of a head scratcher for me. Like, why? Why? Like, how is this guy not a bigger star than he than what he is right now? Because I think like he's got a lot of the fucking tools to be a big fucking star.
Yeah, I think the only thing that he's lacking is the promo ability. If he could cut like a real killer promo and project that monster aura, then he would be the total package. But yeah, I would say that's the one thing he's missing.
Give him a manager. Give him something. Give him a, give him a mouthpiece. Give him a ghetto, you know, or something along those lines. You know what I mean? Like, just give him a fucking, you know, that's a lost art, by the way, you know, being the manager. Right.
Who the fuck's he?
Right. Right. Like, let's do that. Like, if that's the only thing, that's, I feel like that's a hurdle we can fucking overcome very quickly. Fucking give him Gino. Give him Gino Gambino. You know what I mean? Like, have Gino be a manager. Like, how great would that be? Yeah, and yeah, and where is Gideon Gray? Right? Like, wasn't he part of United Empire? Like,
yeah, I just assume that this is a cost-cutting thing that they decided that flying him out was not worth the money, which is a shame because I thought he brought a lot of value.
Yeah, and he would be a great mouthpiece, and again, that's why they're there in pro wrestling, because you had guys who, you know, you needed to get over, and that's why you stuck him with J.J. Dillon, and that's why you stuck him with Captain Lou Albano, and that's why you stuck him with fucking Bobby Heenan, and that's why, you know, like, that's why they're there, to get people over, to be the mouthpiece. Like, that's pro wrestling 101. Like, if that's the only thing that's holding him back, we can work around that, can't we? The guy doesn't even fucking speak Japanese that I know of, right? Like, what's the... Fucking give him a mouthpiece. That's frustrating. Why do we fucking think of these things? It's just infuriating. All right. Are we done talking about New Japan Cup, or do we got anything else?
Well, I mean, it depends. Do you want to go back through... So, matches we have not discussed.
Yeah.
Taichi versus Ren. Where they snatched the rug out from under us and did not give us Taichi versus Zach in the second round, like everybody thought they would. But no, not us. You know, we know we're full into terrorism booking. We were never going to get that. But I will say this. I thought the match was hot. How the crowd were into it. And, you know, your mileage may vary in the House of Torture shenanigans. But at the very least, they're giving Ren a win. So I will take the wins for the younger generation in whatever flavor they come. So I'm not going to bitch and moan too much about that because Ren got a win.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, your mileage is going to vary in him in House of Torture, but yep, he's moving on. So again, this is the summer of HOT. Just FYI, if this is not your cup of tea for the HOT, it's going to be a long summer. Just saying.
And another example of them pairing up these younger guys with more experienced guys, you know, guys like Taichi and Shingo and Cobb, like this is what they should be doing, and rather than just having the young guys wrestling each other. So there was that. ELP defeating Mikey Nichols. Can't remember anything about that one.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I don't even think I saw it, to be honest with you.
skip that one then.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that. I say I had to have seen it. Yeah, I mean, can we talk a little bit about ELP? What do you want to do with him?
I don't know. I don't think any other companies want him at this point. And again, I don't think it's anything bad that he's done. I just think the Chase Kenta booking of the tag titles has just killed any enjoyment or enthusiasm I had about him and Hikuleo, because I thought they come off the back of a really good World Tag League and the World Tag League final. I loved Wrestle Kingdom match was pretty good, and then it all just went down the shitter for me. I've got no interest in it now.
Right. Like, I just feel like what happened to that momentum of, like I feel like Callum Newman has that speed behind him in a lot of people's eyes, whereas ELP just feels like, you know, fucking leftovers in the fridge. And I don't know. I think they've missed the boat on him.
I felt that like there was a window of opportunity. Like I'm remembering, I think it was the New Japan Cup last year where he had that match with Naito. Yeah. And it was great. And the fans were just like living and dying by every ELP near fall. And I thought, yes, they've really got something here, but they've not adequately capitalized on that.
Yeah. I think it's been a big fucking swing and a miss so far, New Japan and ELP. It's been a big fucking swing and a miss. Look, I'm not writing them off yet. I know a lot of people have already written them off. I'm not writing them off yet. So,
we'll see. Okay, I'll tell you this. If he does not put in a good performance or get a good match out of Tsuji in the next round, then I will wash my hands of him.
Okay, I think that's fair. I'm not gonna say we're quitting the podcast. But yeah, I mean, like I would love, and I think it will be a very good match. I think it'd be a great match. Yeah, there's going to be a lot. I think there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on this match. Like we got to see that ELP that we see every once in a while that knocks our fucking pants off. Like, I think we need that from him right now.
What else we got here? There was on the Friday, March 8th in Yamanashi, there was Shingo Takagi defeating Yuya Uemura in 23 minutes, 22 seconds by Last of the Dragon. So I always thought Shingo was going to win, but yet again, more evidence why having the young guys work. This is the running theme of the show. Having the young guys working against more experienced opposition helps them to develop and helps get the best out of them. I don't think this would be a particularly hot take to say that this was Yuya's best singles match since his return. And yet more proof, we should have more matches like this where he can work against more experienced guys to get better rather than floundering against fellow relatively inexperienced wrestlers. So this was good. I don't have any problems with Yuya losing. I think, you know, coming off the back of the head shave and stuff, it wouldn't have made sense for, like, oh, now suddenly he can beat Shingo. So no problems with the result. And I thought a very, very good match.
I agree.
I was talking to Jay Michael about Yuya, and he says that he thinks the backstage comments are very indicative. And he says that Yuya is very underwhelming with his backstage presence. He says he's very wooden. So something to keep an eye on, because again, I do think that does tell us a bit about, at least about the wrestler's mentality, if nothing else. So something to keep an eye on. But yeah, Shingo versus Yuya, good stuff. Thumbs up from me.
No doubt. And I agree with everything you said. I mean, no need to beat the dead horse, right? Everything that you said, I agree with. In hindsight, yeah, maybe I was projecting a little bit more. And again, a deeper run, and here's the thing: they just picked another guy to do that. I picked the wrong guy to make that happen in this particular scenario. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody's complaining about fucking Shingo moving on. So, and yeah, you're right. It was a good match, and we need more of that to get these guys really starting to click on all cylinders. If his promos are lacking, again, I feel like. I guess it might be a bit different if you are bread and butter Japanese. Like I feel like, yeah, it's going to be a lot more important than, say, Jeff Cobb cutting a great promo. So, yeah, I mean, but again, I feel like that's like that kind of stuff, the character development, the stuff like I don't worry about the in-ring stuff. I worry about making those connections and being a person who can be, I don't know, a connecting force, I think is really what we're looking for when it comes to a lot of these young guys. And that comes with getting in the ring, getting in front of people, and working with experienced people and learning from that. So it feels like we should have been past that stage, maybe. But okay, if this is where we're going to do it, fine. Let's do it here.
And what other first round matches? So there was a Gay Kid defeating Callum Newman, Hikuleo defeating Oleg Bolton. Again, this feels like a very long time ago. Callum Newman good. The talent is there. I'm getting sort of 2016 Will Ospreay vibes about him. I want to see Callum Newman, not a Will Ospreay tribute act. So I think it would behoove him to sort of move away from doing sort of Ospreay tributes and his moves like Oscutters and stuff. I would like to see him do his own thing because I think he's got the talent to do that. And Oleg Bolton should have won. He should have beaten Hickler. So there you go.
Yep, I'm with you, but you know they went in another direction. So yeah, I trust me. I'm glad. I don't remember much about any of those matches. So yeah, it is what it is. We are where we are. And a lot of the people, it may have been a roundabout way to get there, but I think a lot of the people that both of us had kind of circled as being deep in the tournament are there. So, yeah, I mean, what would you give me a letter grade overall New Japan Cup so far this year?
B minus.
Oh, so I was going to go a little lower. I was going C, solid C, average.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been nothing that's been tremendous so far. Yeah, anyway, but maybe it will. But yeah, I'm going average. You are meeting minimal expectations so far. So we'll see how we go as we go deeper.
What else was there? So there was the Chase Owens Ishii match, which might have been a dramatic surprise had Chase not ruined it by going all over social media to declare how he was definitely winning that one. Tangela defeating Great Khan in the match that killed the Super J cast. Finlay defeating TJP. Well, this is interesting. TJP declaring himself the captain of United Empire, despite United Empire repeatedly saying that, you know, the original mission statement for United Empire was that there is no leader. And if that is to be taken to face value, TJP kind of going into business for himself, declaring himself the leader of the group when other people don't want that to happen. So I don't, New Japan has just kind of given me the vibes of a promotion that isn't being booked. They're just sort of letting guys do whatever they want.
Right. Right. The guys that they don't necessarily have anything to do, they're letting them figure it out and just go rogue. Look, TJP, with all due respect, is not the fucking leader of United Empire, nor will he be in the future. I think we all can agree with that, right? That being said, I like his fire, I like his wanting to be that person. But let's be real here, right? Let's be real.
Do we want to spend some time on Great Okan? Leica says, what's your take on the biggest, lamest loser in wrestling history? What is the best iteration of Great Okan versus Tangela at G1 31, G1 33, or New Japan Cup 2024? And what stipulation do you hope for their KOPW match? Classic Cat says, why was there such a sudden de-pushing of Great Okan in 2022? It seems he went from an upper mid-carder on the rise to this. I don't want to discuss Great Okan at all. He is a useless sack of shit.
Wow.
And I have no interest in talking about him any further. I'm done with hoping for there to be any sort of progression with him. Despite J. Michael sending me transcripts of his backstage promos, he is saying some funny things about Naito, saying half the ones who held that his belt are in AW, which is a very good line. So if nothing else, he can cut an entertaining promo. But I'm done. This guy is trash.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's one of the head scratchers of New Japan, right? For whatever reason, I don't know. So again, I don't think it's him in the, like, it's not his style, and it's not his, it's just they just don't use him in any way, shape, or form, except looking at the fucking lights at this point. So, yeah, I mean, until there is a consistent and considerable effort made by the booking team to give this guy new life, this guy is a less funny Yano at this point. Right? I mean, that's the tier.
Sad Yano.
Yeah. Like that. Sad Yano. Uh-oh, somebody's got a congestion still. Is everybody okay?
Yeah, Mali has a cough for sort of at least 8 months out of the year. So
she's been hanging out with Dave Meltzer or something.
Right, I'm going to throw a lot of questions. I've lumped them all in together as all sort right. of the duality of the New Japan fandom. So then you can just respond with big picture thoughts on the themes brought up. So, right, here we go. Rambo and Slampy says, how much heat is too much heat? John says, checking out of the product. When should I check back in on the product, Dominion or G1? Scott says, after 2 nights of hand waving New Japan Cup, unless something gets a good recommendation, I'm considering cancelling my New Japan World subscription. Talk me out of it. Jeff says, Damon, how does it feel watching a once great product be clubbed to death like the world's slowest and most depressed baby seal? Do you think worse matches and more House of Torture interference is a recipe for the future? And Classic Catch says, is President Tanahashi on fraud watch? So that's one side of the coin. Here's the other side of the coin. Sammy, will you guys finally give House of Torture their flowers? James says, now that show outdrew Okada in Otaku and his AEW debut for that matter, when are House of Torture disrespecters going to admit that they are wrong and House of Torture are not only more popular than the Meltzer star merchants but more commercially successful too? B. Fred says, how do we get Damon to buy in on the greatest faction ever, House of Torture? Andrew says, how many more House of Torture matches do we need to drive off all the normal fans so the sicko freaks can enjoy sold out Ren Narita in peace? And Nathan says, if the members of House of Torture were Teletubbies, who would be which? So where are you on that spectrum right now?
All right. I'm definitely leaning in more the I'm not loving life when it comes to New Japan Pro Wrestling. It's just not what I look for or enjoy. I understand that heels can be heels, and I think I explained it as best as I possibly could on the previous show, but I will continue on with it's Paul Jones's army. It's Baron Von Raschke. It's Tejo Khan. It's The Barbarian. It's that type, right? That mid-card feud against Jimmy Valiant and Lasertron and, you know, maybe even throwing a Ronnie Garvin every once in a while. It's that. It's the vibe I get. Except we're in the main events and we are prominent. It's not for me. You can like it. You can enjoy it. I'm not telling you what to like and what not to like. It's not for me. And I don't think I'm on an island with that, right? I think a lot of people are frustrated and challenged and not enjoying their free time when it comes to New Japan Pro Wrestling. Now, the problem with that is that those same people have a myriad of options in this day and age to spend that entertainment capital, right? It's turning people off. Now, I know some of this is tongue in cheek with House of Torture, and I know some of this is, you know, we're just going to troll, and I get it. I get the vibe. But there are people that definitely enjoy it and thoroughly are leaning into it. Again, I'm not going to tell you what to like and what not to like. Gates and all that. Look, I'm not saying that it can't be profitable. I'm not saying that it can't be financially prudent to have matches of this ilk continuously to, you know, save on wear and tear. It's not for me, and it never will be. Like, you know, people like to fantasize and remember when, right? There's plenty of Twitter accounts that do that very well. Remember back when. Well, if I remember back when, you know, it wasn't all a bed of roses, Joel. Like, there was shit that you just fucking hand waved, and you just
I think I should point out, like, the early rounds of New Japan Cup are usually a bit shit. So right. I just want to throw that out there as a caveat.
Right. And even at its best, New Japan Pro Wrestling, and you could pick your era, you can, you know, 92, 93, 94, you know, 2018, 19, 20, whatever. You know, even during the best of times, and even in every promotion, you know, that had hot times, you know, if, you know, All Japan still had Kamala too, and you know, Giant Baba in the ring, you know, trying to work things out. you know, Jim Crockett Promotions, you know, obviously had Paul Jones's army. You know, Mid-South had their undercard feuds that you're just like, okay, I'm not really into this. Like every you have that. The problem that I have right now is that that's what's filling up the stuff where you would hand wave it before because you knew you had a big juicy fucking prime rib on your plate at the end of the show that always satisfied, that it was always delicious. So it was always cooked to perfection. You don't have that now. You have that sparingly. What was once used sparingly is now your main dish. That's the problem I have. So yeah, if I'm a work rate bunny, if I'm a fucking whatever, yeah, that's how I enjoy my pro wrestling. And if I, you know, that, I mean, that's it. That's really the state of it's not for me right now. And I'm pushing through knowing, and I will say this, that I don't think it's going to get better before it gets worse if you're in the same boat as me. Like, I don't think that this is going to turn around tomorrow, next week, a month from now, 2 months from now. Like, I think we're in the midst of this. This is our lives right now. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is a light at the end of the tunnel relatively soon. I don't see it. But I'm holding out hope that, you know, even with all the shenanigans and bullshit that goes on these shows and the stuff that, you know, I would generally hand wave, that people are going to get the tap on the shoulder and make it work and make this, you know, what I think most of us enjoy. So we'll see. That's the best I can tell you. We'll see. Give up. I can't tell you how to spend your entertainment capital. You know, cancel your subscription. I can't tell you how to do that. But I will say this, if you don't enjoy it, your life is short, right? Fucking do something that you enjoy. Spend your money elsewhere. And, you know, pop in and out. You know when to pop in and out. Come on. G1, you pop in, you know, maybe even Dontaku. You know when to pop in. You know when it's important. And hopefully they start delivering. Fingers crossed.
House of Torture is a seasonal thing. We're just in House of Torture season at the moment. And Louis says, with Tsuji and Ren advancing to the next round in New Japan Cup, what does that say about Shota? Is Shota being left in the dust, or does New Japan really have bigger plans in store for him?
No.
I think the House of Torture emphasis at the moment is a vehicle for the next step of Shota's development, or his narrative arc at least, where he's going to get his revenge on all the House of Torture guys. So he's lost. So he beat Ren Narita, then he lost to Evil, then he lost to Jack Perry. So it's this is what they're setting up for him. And presumably over the next few months, he's going to get his wins back over all the House of Torture guys and vanquish them. And then they'll be relegated back to mid-card comedy acts for a few months. So that's what I think is happening. I think this is all just a big thing for Shota Umino. So that's my interpretation of the House focus at the moment. So I think we're building up to Shota getting his win back over Jack Perry in Chicago, and then I don't know, maybe he'll be Evil for the Never Tar. I don't know, but I feel that that's the direction for this.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I wouldn't read too much into, well, this guy's doing well in New Japan Cup and this guy loses in the first round. Like, I just feel like they just move the spotlight to those guys this time, and then, you know, maybe next time it's a spotlight a little bit brighter elsewhere. So no, I wouldn't read too much into that. I think, again, the most important thing is that you have some guys that would be labeled, you know, the younger generation that are going deep. They picked some guys and they carry through on that. But I think eventually the cream is going to rise to the top, number one. And they're going to, whoever those people are, will be, I don't think anybody's going to deny that they're going to be a major focus in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. And it's just a matter of, okay, who gets there quicker? And right now it feels like it's Yota Tsuji, but I mean, that could change fucking two shows from now, right? So I just, I don't want people to get too obsessed with, it's got to be that guy as opposed to that guy of these four or five. Like, just as long as we're building someone to that point, and then, you know, well, what is it? The, you know, high tide rises all ships. Hopefully that's the case.
All right, so let's aim to record next on Monday after the semi-final show. That way we've got day off Tuesday, and then the finals would be next Wednesday, March 20th. So let's just do very, very quick predictions who we think's going to make it through. So next would be... where are we in the brackets? Okay, Tsuji versus ELP.
I think Tsuji. I think it's a weird spot to instantly turn on ELP here. And I think there's more value in Tsuji, so I'm going there.
And Ren versus Zach.
Zach. I think Zach wins the whole kit and caboodle. So, I think Zach wins this one.
All right. And then Sanada versus Perry.
This one's interesting. Did they wrestle in Chicago? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, it was the last Forbidden Door show.
Right.
The IWGP world title.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it would be weird if Jack Perry went on. Because I'm saying Evil goes on too. I'm going to say Sonata.
Yeah. Finlay against Scotto.
Finlay, right? I think.
Yeah.
For all the reasons I talked about Goto before, and I think Finley's just where he is right now. He's got to be the guy that moves on.
Then Evil Shingo.
This one's tough. So if you're saying Perry's out, depends on if you're a person that said Shingo was going all the way. And I will say, if Shingo beats Evil, Shingo's going all the way. I think Evil moves on.
And then, as you predicted, it will be Tsuji against Zach.
Yep. Zach wins, but boy, that's going to be a fun fucking match, right? So, fingers crossed we get there. But yeah, I think, like I said, I have Zach penciled in as my winner.
And then your semifinal would be Sanada versus Finlay, which, of course, would be a rematch of last year's final, which Sanada won. So, right. I mean, you'd expect Finlay to get the win there and go to the final.
Yep, that's who I have in the finals, Finlay versus Zach. Two white guys. Let's go.
I think I'm either Finlay Shingo or Finlay Tsuji.
Okay.
Oh. I'd love it to be Finlay Tsuji. I think that would be really cool.
That would be something. And here's the thing. Just because I say I think that person is going to win doesn't necessarily mean that I want to enjoy the opposite, right? Yeah, I mean, that would be fun. That would be your moment. That would be the beginning of we're turning up the gas here, right? That would be very, very good. I'm kind of somewhat would be more excited with that. I just want Zach. I think, look, if you're going to put a gun to my head, Zach's my favorite wrestler right now. And I would love to see him win the big boy belt. Because here's the thing too. I don't think Naito, well, we'll see. I don't think going into G1 Naito's world champion. What do you think of that?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. It's my bedtime at redcircle.com/shows/super-j-cast. If you want to give money to us, I will let you in the Discord if you're nice. At Cobra Kawaii and prowrestlingtees.com/superjcast for our t-shirts. Big thanks to editor Dan. Find him on Twitter at lousyhero219. And we need to plug something, don't we?
Yeah, with we sure
his,
do.
His Escape
the Box. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm amazed at, like, just...
Calypso, it's called.
Calypso. I like that one. That is, like, he sent that one over, and I was like, all right, these guys are picking it up again. Like, I just, like, the production, I think, is what I'm so impressed with. like these songs are just, they're not overproduced, but they sound professional and they sound like, like anything you would hear.
Stan going to hate us for bearing this plug after the t-shirt plug before.
I know. And I probably will. But yeah. I mean, I'm proud of them. Like that band is. I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for that fucking headlining Glastonbury spot. Oh, I just want to be there.
And then they can plug the Super J cast and bring it full circle.
Now that would be something. He comes out with his behind the kit and he's got his Super J cast t-shirt on. That'd be fucking excellent. Hey, and do me a favor before we sign off. Just if anybody has any old clips from maybe last year, people busting us and I can comment on them at the beginning of the show, that'd be great.
That could be our new segment.
Yeah. Way back when. We can go back when too. Just like all our friends. We can do the way back.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.